honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, taking the opportunity to remember Frank Paredes this week after his passing at the age of 103. It's quite a journey he's taken us on in this interview recorded back in 2014.
When you think about that, I mean, I'm just adding it up. You survive the Pearl Harbor attacks. You end up in a B-25 bomber for one mission and get shot down and survive that. Then you're wounded in the leg. You're hit in the ribs and the back. Then you're hit near your jugular vein. How in the world does all that happen? Is it hard for you to even believe?
It is very hard for me to believe, you know.
When you think about everything you've been through and the fact that you're still here, you ever wonder why? If there's a reason for all of that?
Yes, I think so. See, I do a lot of volunteer work. Like, I volunteer over here.
At the VFW post?
VFW post. I help them set up for hamburger night. I help them set up, you know, for breakfast on Sundays. I water the lawn. I do a lot of, you know, picayune stuff. I'm also a member of the county honor guard. It gives me a peace of mind, you know, to help do, you know, volunteer work. I also volunteer for senior citizens, AARP, you name it, they need me. And I also do lectures in schools, churches, and I tell these kids, go to school, get an education, stay away from cigarettes, gangs, graffiti, and dope. Those are killers. They're not, you know, I've been through a lot of people, and my last deal that I tell them is this, I've been through a lot, you know, in my life, but I never saw John Wayne in Iwo Jima, and I never saw him in Guadalcanal. I never saw him any place. But I was in Bella La Bella. I was in Bougainville, Saipan, Tarawa. My last one was Iwo Jima.
And your brother was at Iwo Jima. In fact, you have some documentation that he was one of the first five people to make the top of Suribachi?
Yeah, my brother, Raul, to me, he was my hero because he never got credit for what he did. And Paul over here, he has it documented by some of his people, you know.
Yeah, let me try to explain that a little bit for our listeners. This is your brother, Raul. I have a picture of him on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. He's no longer with us, but he and four others were the first Americans to summit Mount Suribachi on Iwo Jima. We've all seen that photo of the flag raising on top of the mountain. Joe Rosenthal took it, one of the most famous photographs of all time. And you've probably heard, perhaps even on this program, if you've been paying attention, that photo was actually the second flag atop the summit. But one of the neat things about doing this show is that I always learn new things about World War II. And Frank's brother, Raul, is part of this one. Before either flag made it to the top of Mount Suribachi, Raul Paredes and four others had volunteered for dangerous duty, and they'd been ordered to scale that rocky volcano and find a cave that the Japanese were firing from. They had to go up in the dark of night, and they succeeded. More importantly, they survived. And a few hours after they did that, that first flag went up atop Mount Suribachi, brought by another patrol. So your brother had a very historic role on Iwo Jima, but you survived a lot during World War II, and we've heard quite a few of those stories. But eventually you got to come home from the war, to come back to America again. You're in from the start to the finish of U.S. involvement in World War II. So what was it like to come home, to see America again, and know that even at a very heavy cost, freedom had prevailed over tyranny?
I came home in 1946 because before I came home, I joined the 6th Division chasing down a general that had gone to Korea. So we chased him down. We didn't catch him. Another outfit, part of the 6th Division, caught him. But we got 3 unit citations for that. So then I came home. I tried to get a job. Couldn't find a job. I had a 1940 Chevrolet Cab Coupe. I had it in storage, but the tires were stolen. I couldn't get no tires for it. I couldn't get no clothes. I couldn't get a job. So I waited 6 months, and then I joined the National Guard. And at the time, the Korean War was starting to, to develop. So then they sent me back to the Philippines, from there to Japan. So when the Korean War broke out, I went to Korea. They airlifted me to Busan, and they put me in the tanks. I didn't know apples about tanks, but I had to learn real fast, So they gave me a tank, but you couldn't very well use them on account of the snow. They had snow, believe it or not, 18 to 24 feet of snow. You try running a tank in the snow like that, your traction, you'll go deeper and deeper. So anyway, I spent a lot of time in caves, but I did get to go to as far as a chosen reservoir. Truman fired MacArthur. So anyway, they got orders to retreat, not to go as far as the 38th or the parallel. So one of those generals says, we retreat, hell, we're going to advance to the rear. And that's what we did.
It's a pretty good euphemism, isn't it? Did you have some other close calls over there in Korea? And how long were you there?
I was in Korea for, I'd say, till 2 days before the war ended, My knee started acting up. I had a cap already.
From your first wound in World War II?
Yeah. And then I couldn't move my leg. It froze. So anyway, they sent me to Fitzsimmons General Hospital in Denver. And I was there for about 3 months. Incidentally, I have a frostbite too. And they treated that, I got my discharge there. And then they sent me home. When I got home, there was one friend of mine that got killed right in front of me. I promised him that I would go visit his family if I made it. So that's what I did. When I got home, I went to Anthony, New Mexico, and met Frank Chavez's family. His brother was a Senator Dennis Chavez of New Mexico at the time, and that was the hardest thing I had to do. I went and told him, this is a message from your son. He died like a man, and he died a hero. So in Denver, before I got my discharge, this recruiter, recruiting sergeant, he said, if you stay in, we'll give you another stripe. I said, wait a minute. I says, what will I be doing? He says, you will be delivering bodies all over the country. I says, no, thank you. I'm out of here.
And what brought you to Atwater? How long you been here? How'd you end up here?
I ended up here. I came to Monterey. I started putting my life together. I started fishing again. Nah, not for me. I said, I'm going to try something different. So I went into bricklaying. And that's what I retired as a bricklayer. I did it for 40 years.
And I guess the other thing I need to know when I think about this and everything that you survived, when did you meet your wife? Because it sounds like you had to survive a whole lot just to have the chance to meet her.
I went to Mexico, and I met my wife, bless her heart. I was 39 years old already, and she was 23, but she was adopted. She was an orphan, and she had an adopted mother, But they treated her like a slave. She was doing everything for everybody in the family. So one of my cousins there in Mexico told me, why did you take Artemisa and marry her? I says, I don't know. I says, because, she's a young girl and I'm an old man already. She says, I think she likes you. So we start, dating. In the meantime, I was in the fire department in Monterey, California. I went on vacation and I told her adopted mother, I said, okay, if you don't let me marry her, I'm going to do it the old Indian way. We're going to elope. She didn't go for that. So anyway, I took a leave of absence from the fire department. Went down there. I said, okay. I said, here I am. Are we or aren't we going to get married? So the old lady said, okay, you're going to get married, all right. But you're going to have to get married in Mexico, and then you're going to have to get married in the United States. Make it legal in both countries. So that's what we did.
Before I run out of time, let me ask you about Honor Flight. What was it like for you to go on this plane with all these other veterans and go see that World War II memorial?
To me, it was beautiful. We were treated like royalty. We had the best of everything. But one thing, you know, I stole a pen from the Hilton Hotel. But I left $5 there. And they owe me $5 because the pen fell apart on me.
That's funny. And you got to do that with your daughter. What was that like to be able to have that whole trip and all those memorials that you saw and the other veterans you met and to share that with her?
Well, a lot of that she didn't believe, you know. But what got me the most, you know, because as a rule, I was Army, but mostly, you know, I feel myself being a Marine because most of my, you know, was with the Marines. So the Marine Memorial reminded me of my brother, my friends, the people that I knew in the Marine Corps, and especially the Code Talkers. The other one was Arlington National Cemetery, because I have two people, real good friends of mine, buried there. One is Junior Vinvoise. He got killed in New Guinea. He got the Medal of Honor. And the other one was a real, real good friend of mine, Frank Chavez. He got the Medal of Honor, too, from Anthony, New Mexico.
And you told us how you had to go and tell his family about that. Being around all those other veterans, I know you're around a lot of veterans here at the VFW all the time, but having that trip with 70 other World War II veterans or around that number, did you make some new friends? Did that add to your experience?
I made a lot of new friends. But, I mean, most of them on wheelchairs, you know, and not me.
When you think about your children and your grandchildren, what do you want them to know about World War II, about you and your brothers and the guys who felt like brothers and what all of you did back then? Why is it important to remember that today?
I would like to have, being that there was four of us brothers in the military during World War II, I would like to have them put in the VFW magazine.
The one other thing, you mentioned the Code Talkers. Did you have direct interactions with them during the war?
I met them with the 1st Marine Division.
So you felt like you had a special connection to them being Native Americans?
Yeah. So anyway, I did a powwow here at Table Mountain Casino. It was for all Native American World War II veterans. And incidentally, I was the oldest one and the only Apache warrior there. And I got honored for that.
And he was one of our oldest Pearl Harbor survivors until his passing at age 103, the one and only Francisco Paredes. Again, that memorial service will be at St. Patrick's Church in Merced, California on Friday, October 27th. And I have all that information online for you at hometownheroesradio.com. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.